Hello, you're listening to The Joys of Teaching Literature. We're here talking about all things high school English. I offer online professional development for high school English teachers, so if you want to know more about me, you can go to theteachersworkshop.com. All right, so this week we're talking about AI. I feel like it's... I actually had another blog and podcast on this topic when AI first sort of came out, and right before... that I actually had another blog and podcast about plagiarism. So it was like a weird coincidence. Because it's not the same thing, but it's getting something else, someone else, right, the internet, to do your work for you. It's I think it's something that is always going to be an issue. It's been an issue with, you know, back when they printed out, you know, people bought copies of Cliff Notes. Obviously, that was a lot easier for teachers, right? Because it was probably the one sort of source text there where you just had to have a copy around, I'm sure. There's so many different ideas that people have come up with. Like, I heard once, put a plot summary from Spark Notes as your, like, quiz question. And then they have to sort of fill in more detail. There's a lot of really creative things I think people are doing. I have my own system of just collecting notes because I think there's a value in taking notes. So it doesn't really have much to do with a reading check as it does, you know, it's just a sort of assignment that I give. While they read the book, they basically just have to take notes, and I have different sort of ways of explaining that, you know, just because that's what I always did, whether it be history or, you know, sociology, anthropology, or even just listening to a lecture. You have to sort of take down the information, think about it, and write something, and that's an education, right? So I think there's sort of a lot of different methods that we can sort of put into place. It's kind of like classroom management. I mean, there's just like a lot that goes into it, and ultimately, if the activity's not good and the book's not good and everything that you're doing is not good, it doesn't really matter how you talk to kids or, you know, how you manage your classroom. You got to have an interesting sort of, you know, curriculum and activities, and you know, you got to give them the opportunity to learn on their own, learn with their friends, learn from you, and sort of differentiate in all the different ways that we do. Obviously there's a lot of different things that are aside from the six things that I'm going to go through to basically sort of help you. That I'm titling this the Preventing the Use of AI in ELA. There's six methods, and really that method is just something I've always done with usually just one research project. At some point in the year, I feel like they're comfortable writing the in-class essay. I usually just do pen and paper for all my essays, sort of for this reason, but also just because I feel like they get distracted on their computers. You know, they go to write an essay, and kids just don't turn it in. Because they're on Facebook, they're on ESPN.com, you know, they're checking the score, getting sucked into YouTube. There's a million addictive things right there at their fingertips, and which is why they usually just don't do the work. So I think basically my sort of main idea here is just to help them write an essay. And I think this is true for every grade level, maybe including college, where if we want them to do something, we have to teach them how to do it. I mean, it sounds kind of ridiculous saying out loud because we're teachers, but I tend to just be really immersed in literature and discussing literature and having activities with literature. And I have to remind myself that, yeah, I'm a writing teacher too. We're not just here to interpret literature. We do have there's a practical goal of what we do for the real world, and that's to communicate and write and speak and listen and all of that. So it's not always just about novels and poems and short stories. That's how we get them there. But ultimately, if we want them to learn how to write, if we complain about, you know, oh, I don't understand why they can't do this or can't do that, then we really have to walk them through the process and be able to conference one-on-one with them at some point in the year. Again, this is around that time, wherever I feel like they're confident in writing and they're where they should be. So, hey, let's do something a little more serious where we do research and I show you the research process and they're going to write an essay in class, and I give them enough time to write something longer in class. I don't say just go home and do this for 2 or 3 weeks. Sometimes I get really good work, but I don't know. Yeah, this is what this is about, right? It's not even about AI. It's about who are they going home and and talking through their ideas with. Do they have a friend that took the course last year? Do they have a parent who's, you know, a reader and really good at interpreting literature and read the book before? Are they working with their friends to come up with a thesis statement? You know, there's just different. I mean, AI is not the only way that they can get an advantage when they go home to do their work. So for me, it's more, that's why I always give the in-class essays, because I basically always want to see that they can construct sentences and in my class, and if they have some kind of problem that they're dealing with, that they don't just give up and try to find help from someone else. I want them to try to find help from me because I'm the teacher. And I feel like I can guide them through it better than their friends can, their parents can, you know, some website can, right? So I want to sort of be there to sort of answer all the questions. So that's basically my main point with all of this, is that, you know, we are going to be the people that prevent them from using AI to write their essays. Now, we also can use the internet. I hate to do this because I feel like I'm automatically telling them I don't trust you right away, which is not a fun thing to do, but it's also kind of the world we live in. I don't know. I go back and forth with it because part of me wants to just see them do the work, help them do the work, and then you know, they can sort of improve their writing that way. But Origin is, I think, a relatively new tool where you can put a, it's called extension in Chrome, and GPT-0, it's actually developed by a Princeton University student. I think I was a junior at the time when it was released. And that now is integrated with Google Documents. So if you assign, and if you create an assignment, for me, I don't know how everybody's LMS works, but for me, I embed it in my Canvas. So I'm able to just click on the assignment, and I get, all of my students will get one copy. It's really just a blank document. So they all just have a blank document that where they can write their essay. They can, you know, gather evidence there. They can outline there. Whatever you want them to do, they just do it all in this one document. And that's the document I'm going to look at and grade. And it's all in one place. So that's a live document. I can see them working on it. And so that's convenient. And that has a plagiarism check now too. So it has like some kind of time lapse thing where it shows you a video of them. It's kind of creepy. I hate it. You're like watching this time lapse of them typing. It's a subscription too. I think they only give you 5 for free, 5 assignments or something like that. So it's not, unless your school subscribes to it, you're not even going to have this option. And then there's, of course, Turnitin. I'm sure a lot of people are familiar with Turnitin, or just Google. You can kind of plug something into Google and just get, you know, see if it matches different websites and all different kinds of ways of plagiarizing other than just, you know, writing down the exact phrase on a website, right? They can summarize a website and just do different things with what they're reading online. So, you know, so there are tools that you can technically use to sort of detect plagiarism. But really it's going to be up to us to teach them what they need to do, try to make that task as easy as possible. And for me, I talk a lot about in class how the notes that you take in class during not at home, because I talked about independent reading checks before, where they take notes while they read the book at home. But you study the book for 5 or 6 weeks, you're gonna have at least 50 quotes from the book, right? So you have way more than you need to write an essay. So that alone should make the process easy, even if they haven't read the book. In my class, we read the book out loud all of the time, and I'm summarizing the plot all the time. People are talking about the plot all the time. So if they're able to just try and think of, you know, even if they haven't read, you're still reading, you know the plot, you can read a passage and sort of get the gist. It's obviously not best case scenario. We want them to read the whole novel, but it's at least they're reading and they're writing. And But that's kind of what my main point is that writing the essay is actually the easiest thing if you do all the work involved before you sit down to write the essay. Now, of course, if they're not paying attention in class, they have not read the book, you know, and they're not doing anything, then yeah, writing an essay is going to be incredibly difficult, and that's when they're going to turn to AI, because they don't have anything to say, because they haven't thought about it, they haven't listened to anybody else say anything about it, they haven't read the book. So in some extreme cases, of course, you're going to sort of struggle, even if you assign something in class, you're going to have kids who struggle because they just haven't done all the legwork involved. But that's why I emphasize all the time, you know, the value of the classwork is that you can use it to help write the essay, and it should basically write the essay for you. It should be this easy, stress-free process if you do all the work involved. It's not true, it's true not just with novels, but with any class that you're taking, right? You have to do the work involved, and then the assessment is basically just, you know, you reviewing and going over your notes. That's how you study. So the six, let's go over the six quickly. You know, and the way that, just one last thing too, when I have classwork assignments, I call them like whole novel activities, because I don't know what else to call it, but we look at, I talk about this a lot, but I basically go topic by topic. So at the end of studying one unit, we have 10, 15 topics that we've covered, and each of those topics will have 10, 15, 20 quotations connected to that topic. So again, when they're thinking about the structure of their essay, it's already there, right? So the process of writing is just really up to them how they organize it and structure it and figure it out. They can pick a topic for their thesis. They can pick a topic for their topic sentences. And so it's sort of a model for what they should do in any subject. You have a topic, right? In any subject, you have this complicated textbook, but then you have topics, and you have ways that textbook is organized and divided up, and you take notes on those sections or topics about whatever it is that you're learning, right? So that's basically how I try to model my classes. I have the structure of the essay sort of embedded in the class that I teach, and then they can build on the topics and connect the topics to each other and things like that. This is basically kind of describing just any kind of writing process for a research paper. The first thing that you do to prevent the use of AI in your class is to have them pick a topic of choice. Now, it's going to probably be on a book but in general, I think the topic, if it's something they choose, then they feel invested in it, and they feel like, you know, we're going to be involved in the selection of the topic, and, well, that's a little too broad. Well, what do you mean by that? And all those different conversations. But if they present the topic to you, you can say, okay, so what are you going to talk about if that's your topic? And they can kind of give ideas. But just being involved in the process is kind of the heart and soul of what I'm talking about, right? Because if they can't talk about what they're writing about, again, that's when they feel like, oh, I got to go use AI. I got to go use this website because, you know, I'm not comfortable with what I'm talking about. I don't feel like I know this. But having that conversation with them in a way is this kind of informal assessment of whether they know what they're talking about, and you can kind of guide them through or point them to different passages, like, oh, okay, so that's a good topic. Why don't you go read this chapter or look at this, have you thought about this part of the book, right? And they say, oh, yeah, that's true. That's connected there too. So you can have those kinds of conversations about the direction that they can go in with their topic. The second thing is to help them write the outline. So they basically are, so I have my topic. And when I say outline, I really mean like an introductory paragraph. So they start writing their introductory paragraph. You can sort of help them along with that, their thesis statement, their topic sentences. And then I might say just a list of different page numbers, maybe five or six for each of the body paragraphs, something like that. Depends how long you want the essay to be. But whatever your minimum is, you say three, at least three quotes for each body paragraph, something like that, whatever you decide. And then they go find those quotes, and they already have, some kind of framework for their essay laid out for them, and now they just have to basically write the body paragraphs after that. But again, when you get the thesis statement and the topic sentences, that's sometimes a challenge for kids because they're, sometimes they do a little too much with the thesis, sometimes they do too little, or it's too simplistic. Same with the topic sentences. So if, you want them to extend their idea or that's how I describe it as being this, not just a support, but like an extension of what the thesis does. And then you can kind of give them feedback on that once you see it in the Google document, and you can kind of click on different ones. And some of them, I might look at it and say, this is good. I'm going to go to the next one and really just help the people that you think need a good conversation, and those conversations can be quick. Like, hey, I checked out your thesis, your introduction, you know, where are you going with this? Did you consider this? You know, why don't you make it sound like this? Or this is not that clear. Maybe make it a little bit more clear. You know, that sort of feedback that you can have. And with Google Docs or whatever kind of document that you're able to kind of look at, instead of looking around the room, or sort of walking around the room, standing next to people, you just call them up to your desk, you know, and just have like a normal sit down, eye to level kind of conversation, rather than, you know, having that judging stance, if you want to call it that, next to them as you're standing up and they're sitting down, right? So you can kind of just invite them up and have a conversation. You're looking at it on your screen, they're looking at it on theirs, and you can just sort of go back and forth with, you know, where they're going with the essay. The third thing is to basically what I'll do is model exactly. I do exactly what I want them to do. So I'll model research. I think it's important for them to figure out their thesis and their body paragraphs first. And then it's okay, like, let's do some research. You could obviously do this before, that works well too. You can do it at any point in the process. But I feel like if they read some of the sort of literary criticism, whatever it is that they're writing about, it's important to have independent ideas first and then kind of see what other people are saying. So they have some kind of opinion and then they can tweak it and think about it as they incorporate different sources into their writing. But that's important to basically, like, just do it for them. Just however you want them to quote it and interpret it. And if you want them to use two or three sources, one that's literary criticism, sometimes what I'll do is like literary criticism and then, you know, some kind of contemporary essay, so sort of broad topic or, yeah, whatever it is, a video, podcast. You can have them, you know, if a source can be a poem. I usually just kind of tell them they can bring in whatever they want. But you have to show them, like, especially in the case of literary criticism, like, here's this thing that's interpreting the book this way. Now, how are you going to use that in your essay? What's it going to sound like when you use it? Because obviously it's kind of challenging because you're like looking at somebody saying something about the book and then you're expected to go say something else about the book. And how do you not lift language in that case, right? So you're basically teaching them how to not plagiarize, which is what they have to learn. If you ever wondered why they plagiarize, it's maybe because they were never taught how to not plagiarize. And look, here's what you read, and this is how you put it in your own words. So I'll usually have an example that I created on my own, like maybe one body paragraph or even just a few sentences, where you read, you know, in my case, I'll do read about a paragraph or so. Like, all right, so this is what this person said, and then here's what it looks like in an essay. So you're modeling it, not even from, it could be from another student, you know, from somebody who took your course last year or something like that. But it could also just be something that you write yourself to really show them exactly what it sounds like to use an outside source. So I think that's an important part of the process too. The fourth thing is to check in with students to give feedback on body paragraphs. So finally, they're really finishing the product there. They're spending their time finishing the essay, basically filling in all the stuff that they didn't get to with the introduction and the thesis and the topic sentences. Now they're just sort of interpreting quotes, making sure it's, you know, logical. You can check for grammatical mistakes there, parts of clarity, if they're improperly citing quotes, all those different issues that you usually end up making marks on, right, with red pen or whatever, if you're old school like me. But we're giving, instead of giving them the feedback after they wrote the essay, now we're giving it to them as they write the essay without writing it for them, just kind of guiding them in the right direction. Why don't you think about this? Or what about that part? You know, that sort of thing. So you're not revising after the fact, you're revising sort of in the process. So wherever you are clicking through these different Google documents as they're writing them, and you're giving them feedback in real time as they write. Of course, you know, I was going to kind of end with this, but I'll stop right now and just say this is not how I do every single writing assignment. Right? This is one writing assignment, but it does show them how to do it. So in the future, they won't need this hand-holding step-by-step, kind of breathing, you want to call it like breathing down their neck. If you think this is too much, I agree. But I only do it once a year. So once I do it with them, they're really comfortable with it and then can do it. You know, and I teach seniors, a lot of them who are going to, off to college, and they can go off and write a proper, you know, college research paper. So the fifth thing, so I'm kind of left off on four, number five is to encourage students to collaborate on ideas and clarify their thoughts. So I don't think this whole process is individual. I think it can be something where, again, I'm sitting there and saying, well, what do you mean by this? And why don't you think about this other part, you know, just bouncing ideas off each other. But they can do that with, I think it's fine to do that with their peers. Again, I think that's, I know that in college, when I prepared for tests, I worked with another person and we bounced ideas off each other. Saying it out loud makes it easier for us to understand. Like when you teach something, it's like kind of teaching chemistry to another person. Once you teach it, you're like, okay, now I got it, because I can show somebody else how to do it, and you're helping yourself understand it at the same time. English is like that too. So you have the kids read each other. Of course, they have to be comfortable with each other and be friends with each other. And they can kind of, oh yeah, I don't really understand that part. What do you mean there? And it doesn't have to be this long, formal thing. It can just be casual. Hey, by the way, you know, can you check this out for me? It could be a 2-minute conversation. It doesn't have to be, okay, now we're going to peer edit or review for 45 minutes. It doesn't need to be that big of a deal, but it's something we can kind of encourage. Like, hey, if you want to, you know, ask somebody else's opinion on a passage, you know, that's okay. And just don't write it for each other, but just ask them what they think and, you know, suggestions or questions that they have about what exactly you wrote, that kind of thing. But you're there with them, you know, and you're saying, like, this is never okay to, like, have somebody else do your work, right, guys? Like, this is, we're just helping each other and talking this through and, you know, that sort of thing. So number six is talk about a meaningful conclusion after writing the essay. So that's the final sort of structural part of the essay, is a conclusion. And again, you're not always going to do this, but I think it is sort of a valuable thing, for especially if kids are talking to each other about their essay or talking to you about it. You can have that actual real conversation. Like, okay, so you wrote this really fascinating thing, observing all this different stuff about this novel or whatever it is you're writing about, whatever topic, doesn't have to be about a novel. What are the implications for that in today's world? Have you had an experience with this? Someone in your family? Have you, you know, what are your real experiences? How your real experiences connect with the thing that you just wrote? That's your conclusion. And so you can actually have that real conversation. I think a lot of kids do get stuck there. And so we're just kind of giving them a little food for thought. Like, hey, have you thought about how this is related? Or what about this? Or what about that? So, you know, it's, again, you're not going to do this with every activity, because we don't want to write the essay for them. We want them to write it. But again, we're teaching them how to write. That's what we're doing. We're just sitting there, you know, encouraging them to kind of think about what they want to write in the conclusion. We're helping them write a conclusion. So we're just, again, not every kid is going to need that assistance. You know, go to the different documents from different kids. Some of them are going to be getting it and some of them are not. And you just have the conversations. Obviously can't have, you know, conversations with every kid every minute of every class, but, you know, that is, you know, that's, you're just sitting there basically doing that, and they're writing, and, you know, if you want to call it like a writing lab or something, but you're really just going to sort of walk them through the process of this kind of complicated task. So you're clear on your expectations, they know what you want, they know how to get there, they know what to do. Yeah, it is a little much, but again, I don't do it that often. Obviously it depends on your students. If your students need it for every essay they write, because they need that kind of handholding where you want to walk them through it. But, you know, for me, I think that it's always important to prioritize conversations about words, for lack of a better term, right? That's what we do. Ideas, concepts, you know, literature, those conversations take priority over different bookkeeping things and quizzes and assessments. Like, there's just so much that gets in the way of when they actually learn. So that's why I don't do this often. So I think having the conversation is what's going to help them write the essay. Gathering the evidence is what's going to help them to write the essay. So I try to spend most of the time doing those things. But for this one particular assignment, I really stop and give them the time that they need instead of saying, like, again, just give me this in 2 weeks or whatever it is. I really walk them through it and make sure that they're hitting the deadlines that they need to hit. Today, we're going to do a thesis statement, a topic sentence. I want a thesis statement and topic sentence for everybody. You know, you could say have some kind of holistic grade where it's like, I'm going to grade you on this entire process. If I see that you're not hitting the deadlines and doing what you need to be doing on time, then it's going to affect your grade, something like that. I don't really need that to motivate my kids. They're usually just sort of on track if, you know, when you're there with them. So obviously it depends on your kids, how often you do this and how you do this, but I feel like it's a good way to just know that they're actually writing and that you're there. If they ever hit a snag, you're there to kind of help them guide around it, and they don't ever feel the need or that writing block or any kind of frustration that they have with the whole process where they're kind of stuck on what to do next. You're there. Like, some kids have parents who are there that want to help, and some parents are like, you got to do this on your own or ask your teacher. And so that's why you're just kind of, your presence there in class is just to help them guide whoever needs the help to help them through that process. So that's basically my approach to preventing the use of AI in classrooms. Of course, we're never going to be 100% successful with this, but that's been true for a long time. So hopefully this will help. I'd appreciate it if you give me a review wherever you listen to your podcast. Thanks for listening.